delegate math right now, Bernie Sanders would need to win 73% of the remaining delegates to clinch the nomination. That is a virtually impossible task.
I will not deny for one second that we still remain the underdogs. But we have come a long, long way, you will have to concede, in the last 10 months. We do have a path toward victory.
I had nothing to do whatsoever with the National Enquirer, neither did the campaign. And I will tell you, for him to try and say that I had to do with it, to try and put the shoe on the other foot, is disgraceful. And by the way, he's the one that started it.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Monday, March 28th, 2016. Welcome to another week. Welcome to another day. As you were munching away yesterday on your Easter basket, all of the chocolate you may have gotten from the Easter Bunny over the weekend, do you ever wonder what holiday is actually the bigger one in terms of chocolate sales? Is it Easter? Is it Halloween? Is it possibly another holiday? Well, guess what? It is actually Easter. And some figures, we've actually pulled together some figures for you because I was wondering what it is over the weekend. And chocolate is king on Easter by way much. In the week before Easter, Americans bought, get this, $823 million in cream-filled eggs, chocolate rabbits, and colored marshmallow peeps. This is according to the Nielsen Company. That narrowly beats out Halloween, but still, it is the most lucrative week of the year for candy retailers, even bigger than Halloween. I thought that was rather interesting.
I think today is the day to go shopping for candy.
It always is.
Today is the day.
It's just like the day after Valentine's Day. Today is the best day to go get candy. Today, tomorrow, it'll be like 20, 30, maybe even 50% off.
Oh, yeah. Who cares if it's a bunny? Just eat the ears off exactly. Any time of the year.
And then dunk it in peanut butter and you're all set.
Yeah. Well, they have the peanut butter bunnies now. They have all kinds of bunnies. Cookies and cream bunnies.
Yeah. There is actually a shortage, though, of chocolate, and so that's why it was a little bit more expensive to be the Easter Bunny this year. But chocolate prices, they're expected to go down. And believe it or not, it's climate change, according to chocolate growers, that's affecting their business. Well, let's go first to the market desk, the WGN market desk, for some overnight global intel on what's happening around the world. Asian stock markets rose today after Chinese industrial profits rebounded into positive territory. U.S. economic growth was stronger than expected. That's helping to buoy the rest of the world. Profit at major Chinese industrial firms rose 4.8% from a year earlier in the first 2 months of 2016, the first gain since 2014. The dollar gained against the yen and the euro. Benchmark U.S. crude oil remains under $40 this morning. Economists say they're getting more pessimistic on growth this year. New survey of economists indicate growth pessimism. Most 48 economists surveyed by the National Association for Business Economics, 79% have lowered their outlooks for growth in 2016 and now expect the U.S. will grow only 2.2%, down from December, a prediction of 2.6%. You'll remember last week that the Chicago Federal Reserve president said that he expected there to be 2.5% to 3.5% growth this year. So that is concerning and adds more fuel to the fire that the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates 2 times this year. The markets, European markets, as Vic told you in the open, there are closed today. The U.S. markets get back to business today, and the Dow futures this morning are pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street, up about 53 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures also higher this morning. It is never easy to admit failure, and when you're struggling, it's awful hard to ask for help. That seems to be the case with startups and innovators, especially in Silicon Valley. And we bring in our first guest this morning on the program. She's been here before. Amy Groth is with us on the phone this morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Amy, how are you? Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Amy's a writer for Quartz, and she's working on a story about this right now. Both aspects of this, Amy, is that the startup companies, startup people don't want to admit failure, and they're a little too proud to ask for help? Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, that is. That's a huge problem in Silicon Valley and in the tech hubs around the country. 9 out of 10 startups fail, but entrepreneurs really don't want to talk about failure and the struggle that it takes to build something. And that's leading a lot of founders to quietly suffer.
We're going to get more into this after we check traffic, but this seems to be a huge deal because people often learn, if you're not the person learning, maybe somebody around you or near you learns from your mistakes. And if you're not willing to talk about them, nobody's going to learn from them, right?
Exactly.
Well, what is it that you find is, you know, pushing this? Is it just that maybe they want to keep quiet so they can move on to another project or maybe fix their project in quiet?
Yeah. Well, a lot of startups in Silicon Valley are funded by venture capital, and entrepreneurs are just afraid to admit whenever they're struggling out of fear that they're not going to get their next round of funding.
It's a big deal, and we're going to get into this more. Stay with us. Our conversation with Amy Groth will continue with Quartz. She's written about this. You can find her on Twitter, by the way, at Amy Groth, AimeeGroth. And we'll continue our conversation here on The Opening Bell in just a few minutes.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian stock markets rose today after Chinese industrial profits rebounded into positive territory, and U.S. economic growth was stronger than expected. Benchmark U.S. crude oil rose overnight but remains under $40 per barrel. Looking ahead, a new survey of economists indicates growing pessimism. Most of the 48 experts surveyed by the National Association for Business Economics now expect that the U.S. will grow at 2.2% this year. That's down from a December prediction of 2.6%. Smaller players in the exploding fantasy sports industry say they could be shut out of some states by legislation that's actually intended to recognize the legality of the games. Indiana, for example, plans to charge fantasy sports companies a $50,000 licensing fee. And passenger frustration over slow in-flight Wi-Fi might be alleviated by new technology. The airlines are switching from old air-to-ground systems to satellite-based Wi-Fi that offers speeds of 10 to 20 times what you'll now find on board. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on the phone this morning with Amy Groth of Quartz. She's writing about a story that concerns startups and innovators from a Silicon Valley point of view about how Silicon Valley innovators, startups often fail and then don't like to talk about it and don't really ask for support. She's writing that about 9 out of every 10 startups in the U.S. will fail. So, Amy, this is a big issue that almost everybody is going to have to deal with at some point if they're in this startup world. Is there something you're finding out from the experts about how to better deal with this?
Yeah, well, the experts basically say entrepreneurs should open up and start talking to their investors, start talking to other founders, find a therapist, talk to people while you're building something rather than suffer alone, because that's really the worst thing that you can do.
I like the example that you use here with Ben Horowitz, who's written his book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. He writes that as a startup CEO, he slept like a baby, but he woke up every 2 hours and cried. It's sort of the John McCain story, but still it shows that even the big dogs go through this.
Yeah, it is absolutely common. He also wrote that the most difficult part of being a founder is managing your own psychology. And I found that really interesting and found that to be true with every single entrepreneur I've spoken with. And I've spoken with dozens over the past couple of years during my research.
How much does it impact them that so much of their work as an entrepreneur in their corporate life is tied to their own personal identity?
Yeah. Well, when you walk into Silicon Valley, if you walk on the streets in Palo Alto or in San Francisco, you'll see that entrepreneurs all are wearing T-shirts with their company names. They identify so closely with their company. They are their company. And so that's going on. And then they also have these tremendous pressures put on them from their investors to create, you know, these unicorn companies. And that's an incredible amount of pressure on these people, which makes it just really difficult just to, get through the day.
You talk about these unicorns, and, you know, all joking aside, sometimes that horn hurts. And one of the examples that you're finding is that especially when some of these startups are something more than just themselves, where they have employees and they have to go and lay them off, that makes this situation even worse, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And as Ben Horowitz said, it's such a lonely job. And the solution really, it seems to be, is to just open up, start a discussion here. In the past few years, there have been more entrepreneur suicides, sadly. And it's been discovered that a lot of entrepreneurs actually deal with depression because they are in a situation where they feel like they need to put up a front, and yet they just can't even talk about how hard this struggle is.
Yeah, and this is the surprising part of this, is that based on my interaction with some of these folks, they all seem like they have sort of a fraternity going, but I guess they don't really talk about serious stuff.
Yeah, and that's something that I found in talking to some of these entrepreneurs. One guy, his startup just failed. It's called Circa. It failed last summer, and he said that, whenever he asks people how they're doing, they'll say, I'm crushing it. Everything's going great. But he said, I know that's not true. No one really feels that way. And that's unfortunate that people aren't just willing to just be open and honest, and because that could really help a lot of people.
Do you think that you mentioned that maybe people should seek out a counsel? Do you think that it might be a smart idea for some of these startups to start up their own? What is the group? A group?
A
support group.
Kind of like a. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the guy whose startup failed last summer, the founder of Circa, he actually joined a support group. So that's how he got through his startup failure, was meeting with founders, some of whom did have failed startups, some didn't, but he just, that was kind of his outlet and his way to work through what he's doing. And he said that he is in a much better place because of that.
I have to ask, do you think that some of the people that get involved in this area aren't familiar with the facts and the stats, and they're not prepared for what the reality is?
That's a really good point. And I think a big problem is that the media the media loves to write about founders and kind of make them into these heroic figures. And there's this, one entrepreneur put it this way, there's a lot of success porn. We're addicted to it, but that's kind of why people feel they need to always be putting up a front.
Well, this is a very interesting topic, and one that I'm sure a lot of people are going to be paying attention to. I know you're still working on this story, but we'll look forward to hit QZ.com. Amy Groth, a contributor there, we appreciate you getting up and being with us this morning. It's always good talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Amy Groth, again, of Quartz, QZ.com. You can find her on Twitter at Amy Groth, AimeeGroth. Again, QZ.com. It is 527. This is the opening bell. Over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic, it looks like we might get a new police superintendent today.
We just may, Steve. In fact, it's expected to come this afternoon, and it's coincidentally very violent last 12 hours in the city, so we get to find out whose job it'll be to try and stave off the what appears to be an uptick, according to the numbers, in gang shooting. So we've got all that and the name of the new police superintendent coming up.
He's going to have to hit the ground running. Vic has the news for you in just a few minutes. Stay with us. Again, this is the opening bell. It's 527.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, when Google Maps gets it wrong, bad things can happen. Lindsay Diaz was part owner of a duplex house in Texas that was severely damaged by a tornado on December 26th. She survived by hiding in a bathtub with her son and has spent the last few months waiting for an insurance payout before going ahead with any repairs.
We were geared toward getting the house ready. I mean, we were ready.
Lindsay then received a frantic phone call from a neighbor telling her home that she was hoping to repair had just been torn down.
I pull up and sure enough, it's just gone. I mean, there's nothing left.
Turns out a local demolition contractor who'd been hired to tear down a house a block away used Google Maps to find the address and was directed instead to Diaz's house.
How do you make a mistake like this? I mean, this is just the worst.
The contractor apologized and said this was the first time they'd ever made this kind of mistake.
That's what their job is, to wreck it, and demo.
Still, Lindsay Diaz managed to look on the bright side.
I mean, maybe this is a blessing.
With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:38 on this Monday morning. Have you ever wondered how startups connect with large corporations? Here in Illinois, there's actually a group helping them do that. It's the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition and Institute. And joining us on the opening bell this morning is its CEO and president, Mark Harris. Good morning, Mark. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Morning, Steve. Happy to be here.
The organization that you're the head of is really instrumental in getting some of these startups FaceTime with large corporations. I mean, like Walgreens and Motorola and State Farm and Caterpillar. Why is it important that you be the intermediary there? And how important to these startups is this?
Yeah, no, I think first it's, you know, big companies are increasingly looking outside their walls to innovate. Fast pace of technology. Corporations are really looking for new innovative ideas. So I think it sometimes can be challenging, I think, to connect those two, the entrepreneurial community with big companies in a sort of facilitated way. And so we do serve as an intermediary to really drive that process forward.
You every year have what you call a class of these startup challenge class, and I understand you're putting the next one together. What do these entail, and what might be, if you could maybe give us a little teaser about some of the corporations that might be involved?
Yeah, so the way the process works, it's really a three-step process for us. So we do assemble a class every 6 months. And we essentially start with the corporation. So we assemble a very high-level group of decision makers, and so they put on the table very relevant opportunity areas that the company is interested in exploring. So this could be, you know, anything from data analytics, sensor technologies, energy, power management, e-commerce solutions. And then we take that those sort of opportunity areas and develop a bit of a wish list that we take then to a network of about 35 referral partners. So we go to across the state, the universities, the incubators, accelerators, the venture community, their portfolio companies, and we essentially source and curate and vet the most relevant startups for the corporations, and we develop a portfolio to them of which they select generally about 10 to 15 to come on site at a demo day and pitch. Think of it as a bit of a shark tank where a very high-level group of sort of judges, if you will, inside the companies, evaluate. There's a 10-minute pitch, 5-minute Q&A, and then they're able to explore partnership opportunities after demo day.
And the good thing about this is not setting up a card table at some giant lecture hall or some big, McCormick place. This is actually a very intimate thing.
Exactly. Very, very targeted. I think it's again, very important to note that the big companies are always inviting the startups that they find the most relevant for them. So I think the role that we play to really source the most relevant companies for them has been the key to success in this program, for sure.
Now, your organization has had 102 startups and emerging growth companies. They've presented at 12 corporate demo days. So this is an ongoing thing. Would you call your organization, again, it's the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition, an incubator? Are you an incubator or are you just a facilitator?
Yeah, I wouldn't say incubator. So we are based at 1871, so here in Chicago, having the pulse sort of the tech community, having a lot of activity happening there. But we are, we've been around for about 25 years, and our role is to be, a connector between public-private entities that normally don't organically come together. So I think the role we play very much is as an intermediary to sort of harness all of the great assets we have in the state, including our great entrepreneurs coming out of universities, our incubators, and other types of places that sort of are driving new companies and new technologies forward, but oftentimes maybe have had difficulty accessing customers in their own backyard.
If you sound familiar, if Mark sounds familiar, we had you on about a month ago, talking about the Innovation Index and how university-driven startups in Illinois are really off and running this year and really driving the show. Are you finding that this is sparking new interest in people coming to Illinois or wanting to locate some of these startups here?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say first and foremost, I got to give the universities credit because you're right. We did track a lot of the activity coming out of our universities and number of startups that are not only staying in Illinois, but obviously growing here as well. Two of our biggest successes to date, in fact, came out of universities. So New Current is a company that does really innovative wireless technology, and they received an investment from Molex. They took part in our first round of the program about 2 years ago. Another example was ADM. They went through it about a year and a half ago as well, and they are working now with a company called Veriflow out of the Research Park down in Urbana, doing some very interesting cybersecurity project, one of their processing facilities. So, yeah, I think we're definitely seeing that this is a good way to, obviously, for young companies to access customers here and to sort of keep and retain them here as well.
Well, we've given our listeners this teaser, and I can bet you $1 million that there are people out there saying, okay, ask him when this next challenge is going to be, what, and how we can get involved. That's all going to be coming later. Do you have a sort of a tentative time frame for when you might be announcing stuff?
Yeah, next couple months, definitely stay tuned for the announcement. I think for obviously young companies, they're really excited. As you mentioned, we work with some of the big companies in the state, Caterpillar, State Farm, Allstate, Granger was in this last round as well. So we're really excited about the interest and the growth, and yeah, there is interest in from the big company side. Obviously, we're recruiting now, and we'll be ready to announce in a couple months here for the rest of the year.
Mark Harris, the president and CEO of the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition. You can find more at istcoalition.org and find them on Twitter at istcoalition. Mark, thanks for being with us in the opening bell today.
Yep, thank you.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49 from the market desk. The Dow futures pointing upward. Dow 41 higher. The S&P, NASDAQ higher as well. Oil trading still below $40 a barrel, but up about 14 cents this morning. Let's get the latest on commodity news and ag news. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. We're back in business after the three-day Easter holiday weekend and an important report issued by the Department of Agriculture on Friday, a day the markets were closed and traders couldn't trade the numbers. But the numbers probably won't make much difference when we start trading today because there was very little change from a year ago and pretty much on line with expectations. Total number of hogs in the U.S., 67,600,000. The sows kept for breeding totaled at 5,980,000 and hogs kept for marketing, 61,700,000. All of those numbers pretty much in line with a year ago. Iowa continues to be the number one hog-producing state with 19 million, followed by North Carolina with 7.8 million, Minnesota third, 7.3 million, and then Illinois and Indiana rounding out the top five. As far as the grain market is concerned, we did see some very strong exports, particularly of soybean meal last Thursday, and that definitely helped the market. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. 5:51 now on the opening bell. A Chicago-based music app is getting a leg up on the industry. They launched in full last week. They're called Noted. They've been around before. Actually at Technori a few years ago.
One place where all of your favorite music lives, and with one click, you can send any song to anyone in your network without the distraction of other content. That provides a simple, user-friendly solution to the music industry's biggest sharing problem. While the internet has made it easier than ever to share with people with common interests and tell people what you like, most of these markets have pushed forward. But the music industry is actually fragmented.
That's Ben Hewitt. He's one of the founders of the Noted app, a Chicago-based music app that launched on Friday, already in the top 10 of iTunes downloads. Let's bring in Scott Catoon of Tomorrow's Business Today here on WGN and WGN Plus. Scott, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Have you downloaded this Noted app yet?
I have not, but it's a very interesting thing. I've been watching this thing since they had a different name for it, Nuziki or whatever they called it before.
Nuziki or something?
Yeah. I'm glad that they rebranded it. I can tell you that. You know, it's interesting. I think the intuition we look at this is like, he mentioned it actually in his keynote, that the industry is fragmented. And the concern that I think probably existed in the beginning was that you've got to have everything all in one place to get enough people to download it. But they seem to have figured this out by now allowing you to draft across SoundCloud, YouTube, you know, iTunes, all these different places. This is an interesting thing. This could be a huge thing for Chicago because we don't really have anything in the user and consumer sort of entertainment space. Ours is a lot of credit and things. So this is a new toy for us.
Yeah, and this is how big it is. Since it launched, and I filtered out all of the local media about this, one writer says it's the Instagram of music, which is huge for somebody to say that. It has gotten press all over the world. As I mentioned, it's in the top 10 of iTunes downloads. Is this one of those where you have you strike gold in the middle of an oil patch that normally doesn't strike gold, or have these guys been working really hard to get this off the ground?
Yeah, well, they're definitely working really hard. I mean, look at the two guys who are in it. They've been in the music industry for pretty much forever. You know, it's interesting. I guess I would say that I'm sure part of their exit strategy is to get in front of as many music producer people as they possibly can to sell this eventually, because, like you said, you're in the middle of an oil rush. I have, you know, a few concerns with it just in regard to, you know, as we said in the beginning here, a little bit of niche, and it's the fragmentation of the music industry, and just overall, look at how challenging it has been for the music industry with regard to iTunes and things. Those are great apps, but to make money has been a challenge. And I wonder if that's going to be a challenge that correlates with this. Will this be a difficult thing for them to actually make money? It's one thing to get a million downloads. It's another to actually turn a way to monetize that. But that said, it's the first one that has made it this quickly, or not this quickly, but this far with this kind of panache, if you will.
You know, you can find them at noted.fm and on Twitter at noted.fm. On tomorrow's business today on WGN, you've been talking with IndieRap, and here's another company that's really kind of taken the world by storm.
Oh, my God. Yes. Julian is the founder. Talatson is his last name. They literally have worked with, you name the brand, Boeing, Pepsi, just every major brand. They've been around for a while, and honestly, you hear a lot of people talk about, how did you get there? And I just had them on my show, and the secret to their success is honestly just they work so hard, and we actually had them as to sort of make it a really great show. We had them do the video and all that stuff for our show for that week just to really get to know how they operated, and it was incredible. I mean, these guys, they produce like I've never seen before. I've worked with a lot of video companies. They just have vision that is really unparalleled in Chicago.
And here we are with another Chicago company making it on the world stage. It says it again about being a startup in Chicago. It's a good thing.
It is. We've got a ton of companies that are really exciting and cool. And, you know, there's going to be more coming out all the time. And we've got, you know, a really strong entrepreneurship community, as we've talked about many times. What's different about Chicago today versus even a year ago comes back to how the funding and how the attention is drawn here. We just, you know, we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, that the South by Southwest, we were represented by, 20 some odd companies that were being awarded. I mean, it's the growth is just crazy.
Before we let you go, I'm going to let people know that there's an event coming up they may want to attend. It's the Product Innovation Panel. And it's April 26th at 1871. What is this event about?
Product Innovation Panel. So I don't know if you look at all the events and things that are going on at 1871, we try to focus on one thing at a time and have numerous opportunities for people to meet. So the Product Innovation Panel really is looking at something that Chicago hasn't really been known for, which is identifying individual products themselves and not so much service-based.
And so on the billboard this time, you get this Trunk Club, I think, is going to be there. Sprout Social, Paylocity, Conversant. Again, this is April 26th at 6 p.m. You can find more at 1871. Sounds like a pretty good show.
Yeah, I mean, the panel can't get any better than that. I mean, yeah. Some of the Chicago's who's who. And again, these are companies that if you look at everything in general, Chicago, those are the two or three companies that come to mind because we just haven't really killed it in that space yet. But, you know, honestly, I have faith that this city is going to have a ton of really amazing companies in all kinds of different spaces. It's an exciting time.
Scott, good to talk with you as always. It's Scott Catoon, the host of Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN, at TBT on WGN. Thanks as always for being with us on The Opening Bell.
Thank you so much, Steve.
It is 5:58. That's the program for today. Reminder, we'll be back bright and early again tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. The show is produced by Mary Sandberg with production help from Mike Jacobson. Our engineer this morning is Ben Cortez. The Steve Cochran Show's next. Nick DiGilio is sitting in for Steve today, and that's all coming up. Stay with us. It's 5:58.